The title of my presentation is Evaluation of Surface Energy Balance Models for Mapping ET with Landsat Data for the Texas Pipelines Conditions. I would like to recognize my co-authors, Drs. Terry Howell, Paul Colaizzi, Steve Evett, and one of our graduate students, Raghuveer Venukulu, who is with Princeton University. I just want to give a little bit more background in addition to Dr. What Dr. Evett gave on the study area. The Ogallala Aquifer region is located in the central U.S., which covers about 8 states, of Nebraska in the north to Texas pipelines in the south. The southern half of the region is known for arid to semi-arid conditions with very high evaporative demand. If you look at the crop water demand for major crops in the summer, it varies from 835 millimeter for corn to about 458 millimeter for winter wheat. For sorghum and cotton, it takes about 688 and 647 millimeter. But if you look at the rainfall, annual rainfall, it varies from 366 meter, millimeter on the western edge of the aquifer to 813 millimeter on the eastern edge near Iowa border. And most of this rainfall, nearly 80% of it actually occurs in May and June. So the high water, high crop water demand actually occurs in July and August. So this demand has to be met with irrigation. So about 90% of the water pumped from Ogallala Aquifer region, the Ogallala Aquifer is actually used for irrigation. And at this rate, there are some estimates that within the next 30 to 50 years, there won't be any economically usable water left in the aquifer. So the one way to prolong the life of the aquifer is to improve the water use efficiency through improved irrigation management strategies. For this kind of work, we need high spatial resolution ET maps on a daily basis so that farmers or producers can use these maps to improve their irrigation irrigation scheduling techniques. So one of the main goals of BEREC's 2007 experiment was to develop an operational ET remote sensing program for the Texas pipelines. So all our experiments were designed to meet this goal. That included evaluation of main ET models that are available in the literature, downscaling of ET maps from low-resolution data sets to high resolution, development of region-specific crop parameter models such as leaf area index model, percent cover, crop height, because these are the important input to these ET models. Then evaluation of new technologies such as large aperture scintillometers to see how well these instruments work to estimate ET. So in 2008, with an expanded scope where our colleagues worked on energy balance closure problem with eddy current systems. In 2007, we had tall crops such as 4-H sorghum and 4-H corn on our laser meter fields. In 2008, we had a short crop, which is cotton. Once again, this is our study area. We are located in Bushland, Texas, which is about 10 miles west of city of Amarillo. We fall under two Landsat paths, the path 30 and then 31. This is our research facility. We have four large laser meters located at the center of this square field, arranged in a black pattern. And these two fields are under irrigation, and these two fields are under dry land management. Okay, during 2007 and 2008, we acquired remote sensing data at different resolution. In visible and near infrared, we had images from 50 centimeter to 250 meter. And in thermal, we had data from 1.8 meter to 1,000 meter. Okay, this is just show you that what are the data that we collected during this campaign. We had about 40 different locations where we collected crop parameter information such as leaf area index, percent cover, crop orientation, crop height, soil moisture, surface temperature, all that information. And also, we had three scintillometers deployed during 2007, two on the lysimeters, and then one on the grassland here. So overall, we were able to get about 24 aircraft images, five Landsat, and two ASTER images during Barracks 2007. This is some of the data layers that we were able to acquire during the 2007. These images are 50 centimeter color composites acquired from aircraft aircraft that we used for Utah State University, and this is our ASTER image. We were able to get two of them, and then this shows the Landsat image that acquired on July 10th. Okay, we also had three scintillometers during 2008. And one across the irrigated, one across the dry land, and then one across the one dry land and one irrigated, to look at the capability of LAS to estimate ET over composite landscapes. So, having said that, the main objective of this research was to evaluate three energy balance models such as CBAL, METRIC, simplified surface energy balance model using lysimeter data, and Landsat 5 images. For the Texas pipelines. So the first two models, CBAL and METRIC, uses the energy balance equations to estimate the ET. We can use remote sensing data to estimate net radiation and then ground heat flux. For net radiation, we need NDVI and broadband albedo. Estimating ground heat flux, so we need information on NDVI, surface temperature, and then the broadband albedo. So once we know that information, we can estimate ET by dividing the latent heat flux by the latent heat of evaporation. Just to give you more information on the models, CBAL was proposed by Wim Bastiansen in 1995. This is based on the assumption that sensible heat flux linearly varies between the hot and cold pixel that we find on the image. What it means is we need to find the hottest and the coldest pixel within the image in an agricultural setting, then we assume that H is varies between these two pixels. For hot pixel, we assume that there is no ET, ET is zero, and then sensible heat flux would be the available energy, which is the difference in the net radiation and the ground heat flux. For the cold pixel, we assume that sensible heat flux is zero, and crops will be transpiring at a maximum capacity that is equivalent to a grass reference ET. In METRIC, it is a modification of CBAL proposed by Dr. Allen, and here the assumption is H varies between the hot and cold pixel as in CBAL, and the only difference in here is for hot pixel, there may be some ET. So we can calculate that using some soil water balance, and then for the cold pixel, they assume that 1.05 times the reference ET, usually alfalfa. And then the third model is proposed by Gabriel Senai, USGS Eros Data Center. This is a very simple model. What he did was he extended this assumption to latent heat flux, saying that latent heat flux is also varies linearly between hot and cold pixels. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip this. This is a very simple method where you can estimate ET within 5 minutes without even calculating any parameters that leads to calculation of ground heat flux and sensible heat flux. For our modeling, we used about 9 different Landsat images acquired 2007 and 2008, not 2006. And if you look at the results for CBAL, the x-axis is observed ET from lysimeter, and then the y-axis is predicted ET. And model was able to account for about 76% of the variation in the observed data. And if you imagine a one-to-one line, The model seems to overpredict all the lower ET values, usually about below 0.4, and it seems to do a good job when there is a high ET number. And similar results, but little bit close to the regression line, and the R-square was about 0.87 for the metric. And for simplified surface energy balance model, you can see more spread here. The assumption that he made that LE is linear to Auden cold pixel seems to break down when the wind speed is more than 7 meters per second. So based on this analysis, we think that ED predictions using C-ball and metric are comparable. And all three methods are very sensitive to Auden cold pixels, but simplified surface energy balance model is a lot more sensitive compared to the other two models. And the last model may not work well during the high speed condition. It seems to break down when the wind speed is very high. And our ongoing work, we are trying to evaluate some more models, such as two source model and surface energy balance models, with more data acquired from 2009, where we had sunflower on our irrigated field and bare soil condition on the dry land fields. And also, we're including the 2006 data set to do a better job on that. Any questions?
Thank you for getting us back on track. So we have plenty of time for questions. Do we have any questions for Dr. Gannett?
Sure. When you're learning the saver and metric approach, did you choose the hot and cold pixel without knowing the actual value from the rice meter, or how did you do it?
Yes, I did not check the values in the rice meter at all. I independently selected the Auden cold pixel. It's not only that, I used the same Auden cold pixel for all three methods.
So basically, you just run the program one time and then
you
just
custom
training.
Yes.
Another
question. When you showed us those comparisons that you developed a very good agreement with, while you're looking at the larger landscape, all those comparisons are straight off station data, is that right?
Yes, all the comparisons.
I mean, I know you did. You might have applied the model over a larger area.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the nice thing about this study is you can compare both dry land and irrigated in one location, because most other studies they only compared the irrigated ones. And my experience is that almost all the models seem to work very well for irrigated conditions.
Why do you think the
C-ball
metric were overestimating the ET at the low level?
I think it's something to do with the selection of the hot pixel, which is harder. The cold pixel is easy because most irrigated fields are very well irrigated, and they're all transferring at a maximum ET rate. But the cold pixel, sometimes what happens is you may get the same cold pixel, same value in two different cold pixels. But if you look at other properties like roughness and all those, they are different.